Welcome back to Season 9 of Talking with Traders. We're into the fifth year of this podcast that began in 2020. Once again, IG have come on board as the sponsor of the podcast. We're truly grateful to have such a global leader in online trading as our sponsors. In the coming weeks, I'll be interviewing various guests from around the globe on the topic of trading. Some of these will be past guests that we invite back onto the show, and some will be new guests. The idea is to attract a broad spectrum of different perspectives from various players in different areas of the markets. None of what you hear here is financial advice, but it is intended to get you thinking about how you might be able to apply what you hear here to your own trading and investing. Remember to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast app. That way, you'll be notified when new episodes are released. Or if you watch these interviews on YouTube, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and give us a thumbs up and leave a comment if you wish. We welcome the engagement. Once again, thank you to IG for sponsoring this podcast into its fifth year, and thank you listeners for your continued support. Now, let's get on to this week's interview. Welcome back to another episode of Talking with Traders. This is actually the first episode of Season 9 of Talking with Traders. So I'm delighted to welcome a new guest to the podcast. His name is Jordan F. And I'm going to ask him to explain that Jordan F before we get into his full name. Jordan, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you here with me.
Yeah, no, appreciate being the first episode of the new season. That's awesome. So all my socials, I'm Jordan F.
Yeah.
Reason for that is I hide my last name. My last name is Fogel. I'll share with you now. So if you look at my name on Google, it's funny. Someone with the same name as me got caught for insider trading like 5 years ago. So it's not me. For anyone watching, it's someone with the same name. But I promise you, it's not me.
Okay. So Jordan Fogel, right? That's what the F stands for.
Yeah.
What an interesting story. Well, cool. It's good to have you with us. So tell me, Jordan, what got you into trading? You're a young guy. I think you said you're only 23 years old, right? And you're in Miami, by the way, for the listeners, that's just so that we know where we are. You're in Miami, living the dream in Miami, and trading. Tell us a little bit about your backstory. What got you into trading? You've been doing it since high school, I understand, yeah?
Yeah, so I started trading in high school. I got my first job at Bed Bath & Beyond. It's like a retail store that they actually went bankrupt and ended up trading their stock a while back.
Actually, really interesting story that when it went, that was 2021, right? When all the Wall Street Bets guys and on Reddit were ramping up the stocks of GameStop and AMC Entertainment, and then Bed Bath & Beyond was one of them as well, yeah?
Yeah, it's a pretty full circle story because I was working with them. It was my first job when I was like 16, so 2017.
Right.
Basically the first shift, I was like, I can't do this. Can't work a job the rest of my life. And it was a pretty easy job. So imagine like a normal kind of 9 to 5. I was like, no way I could do that. So I go home. I look up probably what everyone has looked up, you know, how to make money online, how to get rich fast. And I came across a video of someone trading, and he made like $2,000 in like a minute. And I was like, I could probably do that. So that kind of started the journey and got me into it originally.
Okay, cool. But I know you haven't had an easy journey. I mean, you're doing it now, 7 years later, you've been trading, right? As with everybody that I interview on these podcasts, generally speaking, it's kind of, it's never easy. There's usually some bumps along the way, some very severe bumps. And I know you've had a few of those yourself, right?
Yeah, no, I think the first 2 years I started, I probably blew up over 15 accounts. You know, essentially it would just be a cycle of putting $1,000 in or $500 or $2,000 in a new account, blowing it up after a month, trying to make more money and repeating the process. So it was definitely not easy.
It's like a rite of passage, though, it seems like so many people seem to have gone through that. And how did you fund yourself during those early days when you were blowing up accounts, but, you know, managed to keep coming back for more?
Yeah, I just worked a bunch of jobs. I was glad when I turned 18, I was able to start doing DoorDash. And so I was a delivery driver I did that so much. I have like over, I think, 1,500 deliveries. Did that for like 2.5 years. So I just did as much as I could to find other jobs, make as much money as I could, and use that to fund it.
Pretty inspirational, right? So 1,500 deliveries. How were you trading when you were doing that? Were you one of the youngsters that have a Robinhood account and the app on your phone? Delivering takeaways and trading, or what did that look like at the time?
No, I was never a fan of Robinhood. I've always been using Thinkorswim, a little more sophisticated software. But
Right.
yeah, the cool thing with DoorDash is you can pick your own hours, right? So I would just trade in the morning if I had time for it. I was still in school that time, so I was going to school, and then after school I would come back and kind of do the night shifts of delivering DoorDash.
Okay. All right. So interesting backstory there, but obviously you've progressed. You become more sustainable as a trader. You mentioned you've had a tough start, which many people do, but you've got to a more sustainable point now, right? Let's talk a little bit about your trading. I mean, what type of trader are you? Are you short-term trader, longer-term swing trader? What type of trader are you?
Would definitely consider myself more of a day trader. I'm a little bit flexible. I do some swing trades. I'd like to do some long-term stuff as well, but for the most part, like 90, 80% of what I'm doing is mainly just day trades in and out.
Okay, so and then what sort of time frames are you looking at on your charts that you trade off if you're a day trader?
Time frame's an interesting thing. I get asked that probably the most by like every person I talk to, all the students and new traders. And honestly, so when I'm actually executing, I'm typically looking at the 1 minute or the 5 minute. But I look at all the time frames all the time. If you could like screen share and watch me live trade, I'm literally scrolling through 4 hour, 2 hour daily, 1 hour, 30 minute, 15, five, then one for like every like 5 seconds. I'm going to all different ones. So I look at all of them, I use all of them, but when I'm mainly executing, typically the 1 minute or the 5 minute chart.
Okay. And what do you trade specifically? I mean, obviously there's a lot of stuff out there in the world to trade. Do you limit your universe of what you focus on to trade?
No, I trade a lot. I'm very versatile. So I'll do stocks, options, futures. I don't really touch Forex. And the cool thing with it is, you can, especially if you're trading S&P 500, you can do shares, you can do options, you can do futures, right? So depending on what I'm trading and what the trade is, I'll kind of pick between the three. But 80% of the time, it's typically options, sometimes shares. And then, if I'm trading NASDAQ or ES, I'll do futures.
Okay, all right. So, I mean, what's your approach to risk then? If you're trading options, obviously there's loads of leverage associated with that, and it can go very right very quickly or very wrong very quickly as well. So how do you approach risk in terms of individual trades? Do you have a set amount of cash that you're willing to risk on an individual trade or a set percentage of your capital?
Yeah, so risk is an interesting topic. I think about it pretty in depth, right? Because there's how much of your account you want to risk per trade, right? And so what I recommend and what I typically do is 1 to 2% of the account. It's a standard. I
Right.
typically also say if you have a small account, you can go up to 5%, even a little bit higher than that. It's typically okay if you're doing options. Now the other part of that is actually risking the same amount every trade, which is what people want, but most people don't do that, right? You'll see if you just look at P&Ls of every trader out there, it might be like $70 and $100 and 40 and 30, and it's really random. And I try and keep it the same amount every single trade. With options, it can be really tough because, if I'm trading an Apple option, I'm looking at the Apple chart. That's how I'm trading. I'm not trading technically the stock, but I'm trading the option, right? Now, when you're trying to manage risk, you're trading contracts, you're getting like three contracts at like $2.58, which is $258, and it's like 700, $800. It gets really complicated to say, I want to risk $50 on this trade, right? Because the option may go down $50, but it may not have hit your stop loss on the actual stock itself. And so I have a few different, ways that I'll kind of look at options and set it up where I am risking the same amount each trade. And that's a huge thing I focus on with risk is A, keeping it a small percent of my account, and then also making sure it actually is the same amount every trade.
Okay. And what about the buy sell spread on options? Because I know they can be fairly wide. I mean, you talk about a stock like Apple. Obviously, that's hugely liquid. So I know there's tight spreads on that, and even on the options, the spreads are relatively tight. But when we talk about it, the even on a fairly big stock, the difference between the buy and sell on an option from a percentage perspective can be, several percent wide. Which means you've got to overcome that buy sell spread before you're even breaking even, let alone making a profit. Does that come into your calculation of risk as well, then, in terms of, you're talking about $50, $70, whatever the number is? Because that can quite quickly, you could lose that just on the spread, really, on even a small position, couldn't you?
100%. Even when you're trading sizes of 10, 20, 30 contracts, that it can get pretty wild. So the way I look about that is a few things, right? First one is obviously I want to only trade stocks that have good liquid and good spreads, right? So if something is like a spread of 20, 30%, not really going to trade it. There are occasions I will. And a big point of that is essentially looking at how much am I actually risking on the trade as a percent, not just a dollar amount, right? So let's say, for example, I know I want to risk $1,000 in every trade, okay? Now I could put 5K into a trade and risk 20%, or I could put 2 grand into a trade and risk 50%. I'm still going to risk $1,000. And so if I know I'm going the latter route where maybe I'll risk 50, 60, 70% of an option and I'll go for 100, 200, 300%, I don't mind having much as big a spread, right? It's not going to play that big of as a role. Now, if I'm risking 5 or 10% on an option to make 10, 15, 20%, then if you start getting like a 5% spread, I'm already down to my risk. So I take into that as well as kind of like, okay, how much I'm actually going to risk of the option? Is it liquid? But with the stocks I'm mainly trading, they're typically higher liquid, don't really have to worry about as much. Or if the spread is really crazy, I'll just go with shares at that point.
All right, interesting. And I mean, with that type of setup, would you then hold for a couple of days potentially? I mean, I know you said that you're mostly a day trader, but in my own experience, I find that, often holding these things for a couple of days to a couple of weeks can really yield bigger returns than if you're just trying to job in and out during the day. So, would that be something you'd look at? I mean, you talk about making 200, 300, 400% on an option. And obviously options pricing has so many variables in it, but I mean, one of them being time to expiry. I mean, what sort of time frame options do you typically look at? Are you looking at short dated options or longer dated options?
Yeah, so it depends on the trade. Most of the times, I kind of have a rule of thumb where, whenever I think my target is going to hit, so if I'm planning a swing trade and I kind of do analysis and I believe that my target can hit in like a week, I like to go a minimum 2 to 4 weeks out after that. So I would get 3 to 5 weeks out on the option if that's what I was doing for a swing trade. Day trades, I typically don't do weeklies. I'll maybe do them on the Monday or Tuesday, definitely not Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I'll just go the next week out. I'll go in the money. I like to be a little bit more on the safer side. I know some people go out of the money. Like I used to do that, hate doing that. So that's typically how I do the option side.
I mean, but your weekly options also have a very rapid time decay factor into them, don't they? So if you're doing them on a Monday or Tuesday, I mean that time decay gobbles up or it gets gobbled up very, very quickly as the week progresses. So you need to see movement pretty quickly to make a profit, right?
Yeah,
In those.
and what I'll do is I really only do that for day trades. Most of the swing trades I do are either shares or I'm selling options. So I like to get spreads, iron condors. That way I know I'm taking advantage of time, and I'll go a little bit. I'm fine going a little bit closer to expiry if it's 1 week or 2 weeks, because I know as time goes on I'm going to make more money as long as it stays pretty neutral or at least in my favor.
And are there any specific setups that you look at to initiate a trade that you can talk to us about? I mean, we've got, what you trade, we've got the time frames that you look at, we've got an understanding of how you view risk. But are there any specific setups that you like to look at? And I suppose this also ties into a later question that I've got is around about a playbook. A lot of traders that I interview, and I know by myself, I have a sort of a playbook. It's like an instruction manual, really, that dictates what has to happen in order for a trade to be initiated. And I look at, a variety of different types of chart patterns and setups that dictate a trade. Do you have that sort of thing in your arsenal? Do you have a playbook, first up? And then second of all, can you talk about any specific setups that constitute a high probability trade in your eyes?
1,000%. I wouldn't be where I was if I didn't have a playbook. I know some traders even say they trade based off intuition or they just have been looking at charts so long. I think that's BS, to be honest. I think the only way to be profitable is to have a setup that works over time, to have an edge in the market, right? I've literally been trading the same strategies, the same stuff for the past like 2.5, 3 years. I haven't changed it at all because I know it works, right? So I have one setup. It's not a day trading time frame, so I call it triple line method. It's a strategy I created, and it can be applied to a swing trading strategy I do as well. That's essentially the same thing. I just give it a different name called balance theory. And what it is in the simple terms is kind of a Reversal to the mean kind of strategy, right?
Okay.
So I'm looking at certain, basically what I'm looking for is a range, a balance zone, where, where price is considered fair value, right? Where it's like,
Okay.
okay, there are an equal amount of buyers and sellers. Price is accepting that it wants to trade at these levels. Then I'll wait for one side to move in one direction, either to upside or downside, and then essentially a what we could call a stop hunt, right? Comes
Yeah.
back inside of that kind of balance zone and simply just goes right to the other side. Now that's like a simple term, right? When I actually trade it, I have very specific, laid out rules of like, this needs to happen, this needs to happen, this needs to happen. When this happens, stop loss should go here, target should go here, and let it do its thing.
Right.
So I look at it from a very kind of robotic, kind of automated system as much as I can. And that's how I go about my trading mainly.
Okay. All right. So it's sort of, as you said, it's a mean reversion strategy. It also sounds like it's sort of like fading the extremes from what I can gather from what you're saying, right? Like you said, stop hunt. So stops get triggered. You're providing a little bit of liquidity once the stops get triggered. Do you have a pretty tight stop loss then with those types of setups?
So I don't. So this is one thing I used to do as well. And you'll hear a lot of traders say like, oh, you need at least a 2R on every trade or a 3R, a risk reward, right? I'm not a fan of that as well. I found a lot of success when I started going for 1-to-1s and 1.5-to-1s, right? And so the main thing that's important to me is understanding logical stops and logical targets, right? So putting my stops in the right area is really key. And so sometimes I may be in a position where for me to have the most logical stop, it may only be like a 1.3R trade. So I may risk $1,000, make 1,300, right? So as long as my strategy is in play and the edge is there, that's a trade I'm going to take. So that's kind of how I look at it. I don't typically use, I mean, I have stops, on every trade. I know exactly where they're going to be before I get into the trade. But I'm not like a crazy 5R go for 10R kind of trades guy.
Okay, so that's interesting because obviously there's many ways to trade, but one is, and I suppose the more traditional way is, look for trades that are going to give you 2 to 3 to 4 times more than what you risk, which is what you say, look for 3R trades or 4R trades, and know that, you're going to lose on certain percentage of them, but as long as you're making more on your winners than you're losing on your losers, you'll be net-net, you'll will be profitable. The other way is to do what you do then, which is to say, well, you have a lot more trades, but your return is much closer to what you're risking, as you say, like 1 to 1. You risk one, you make one, R1. But then in that case, right, you need to have an edge, which is you're winning on a far higher percentage of your trades. So do you have information on that you have in terms of what percentage of your trades are winners if you go back over the last year, let's say, or the last 3 years? I don't know what data you've got.
Yeah, 100%. So it's funny because over time I've mentored a lot of people and it's actually crazy how similar their stats are compared to mine. So on mine, typically with the average I've gotten is about 63%. With the students we've gotten about 63.8. So it's really crazy how close it is. So that's kind of the win rate we're dealing with. The average risk reward we found is about 1.42. So it's not as close to 1-to-1, but it's not, near a 2-to-1 or 3-to-1. That's kind of the data that I have, and that's I've seen consistent results with over the past, however long I've been trading.
All right. So you're making sort of 1.5 times more on your winners, let's just say, to round it off, 1.5 times more on your winners than what you're losing on your losers. But you're also statistically, that historically you're about nearly 2 out of 3 trades are winners, and 1 out of 3 therefore is a loser.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. And any times where you've let a stop loss slide, and this is also a question I had previously, but I haven't got to it yet, is, are there any stories that you can tell of big losses or big gains? The audience always likes a war story. It's easy to let losses quickly get out of hand if you're not on top of them. Have you got stories like that where, you've seen ignored a stop loss or averaged into a loser or done any of those silly things maybe earlier in your career?
100%. So one of the things is that when I was starting to trade, sorry, can you hear that?
Yeah, I can, but don't
Okay.
worry. It's not disturbing me. You go.
Okay, just my building's going crazy. All right. So one of the things that's funny is when I first got into LEAPS, which is long-term options, It's funny how the plays and the trades that I have the most conviction in end up never working. I always found it that way, which is weird. But there's one play on target. It was when I first got into leaps. I put about 50 grand into it. Okay. And this was a stock that I knew I would have a stop loss on. And the thing with leaps is you don't really know how much you're going to lose on it. It's kind of like a guess. It's like if price comes down here by 6 months from now, I might be down 20%. I might be down 60%. It's tough to tell the risk. And so this one just ended up kind of staying flat for a while, and then ended up dumping, and I ended up losing close to all of about like 45K. So that was kind of the introduction to leaps. I didn't quit on them though. I started doing more and did a lot more structured, and that kind of came around and made it work. So, but yeah, losing close to 50K on a trade is not fun.
No, I'm sure it's not. Okay. All right. And I guess that's a lesson that you take with you, right? We always learn from these things.
100%.
Have you got a specific daily routine that you follow? A lot of traders have a pre-market routine, a post-market routine. Do you follow that type of thing? Are you very disciplined in that respect?
Yeah, 100%. So the biggest thing I look at is I mean, for me, the setup and the pre-market routine is easy. It takes me like 15 minutes to find my trades, find my setups, because everything's really easy. I have it all dialed down. So I'm usually like looking at charts 20 to 30, 15 minutes before the market opens. But before that, the biggest thing I do is kind of analyze myself. And I think the biggest key is self-awareness, right? And it's crazy how much things in your mentality affect all your trading. So I know, like, if I wake up, maybe I'm just feeling sick, or maybe I had a crazy night last night, or for whatever reason, I feel off. Maybe I'm just headache, like what's happening? That's when I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm just not going to trade today. So kind of just take a minute to really look at myself and be like, am I actually in the right state of mind to be trading? If I'm not, like I kind of give myself a scale 1 through 10. And there's like a whole like system I had for this, but I kind of rate myself, and the average is like below an 8 out of 10. I simply just won't trade, right? Because I want to make sure I'm in the right state of mind. And then post, I'm typically trading for like an hour a day, sometimes typically less, and then post it. I don't really do much. At the end of the day, I'll come back and fill out a trading journal. But after that, it's not really much else that I need to do.
Okay, interesting. I was going to ask you the next question actually about journaling. So it's all of the pros that I talk to, journaling is a big thing, and also what you mentioned about being very conscious of yourself, being self-aware. And it's interesting that you say that if you're not feeling at least an 8 out of 10, you'd rather walk away for the day. And that's quite common that I've actually found that with a lot of other traders as well. It's that being well, feeling your best. It's at the end of the day, this is sort of a bit of a performance sport in a way, and you need to be on top of the game to be able to do it well. But when it comes to journaling, you mentioned that. And I think, I mean, I certainly find that a very, very valuable thing to do. Slows you down, makes you think, makes you question what you're doing, l teaches you lessons, and it obviously is something you can refer back to in the future. What does your journal typically contain?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'll actually give you a little story. So about 2.5 years ago, I actually created my own journal. It was a trading journal. We built it into a business, and I actually sold it in the middle of last year. But the thing about it was the way I do my trading. So with the journaling, it's very, very important kind of when you're getting to that profitable stage and once you first get there. Now that I've been there for like 3 years, I've kind of been full time for a while. To be honest, it's not as important. The main important aspect of journaling now that I'm at this point is really the emotional side, right? As you kind of talked about, like actually looking at the stats, like I know kind of where my win rate's at. I know kind of the risk rewards I'm typically getting. I know my setups to a T, right? So continuing to track that is important to make sure things don't slip and things stay in line, but it's not something massively that I look at. The key thing with me is understanding the emotional side, right? And one of the things I had in the old journal that I did was essentially, it was like a form you would fill out, but it's kind of like you're talking to someone else. It was kind of like a journal entry that you'd kind of be like, okay, this is how I'm feeling. I took this trade. Was it part of my setup? If it wasn't, why did I take the trade? And I kind of have to sit with myself and answer that, like, okay, why did I actually take this trade? I kind of go down this train of like, well, I took it because, maybe it wasn't a great setup, but I thought it would work out. Well, why did I think it was going to work out? Well, I saw something in this other stock, or maybe I saw something on Twitter that told me it would do like all this kind of stuff, right? And I kind of You can start to kind of see where the triggers of things actually happen from, right? Because it's a lot of time things just trigger from FOMO, or like you just desperately wanting to make more money. And sometimes you wake up and you're like, yeah, I had a great day yesterday and I just felt the urge a little bit more to make money today, right?
Yeah.
So I kind of would look at that, and that's the main thing I do look at nowadays is like, how am I feeling and how did that affect my trading? Not as much opposed to kind of getting the right setups and figuring out what that is, because I've kind of got to that point now. So it's still really key, but more as an emotional tool than I do actual like looking at the stats.
Right. Okay. All right. Super. So you're at, well, I'm going to ask you this. I mean, I'm assuming you're a trader that eats what you kill, but I do know that you, and you mentioned mentoring service and whatever. Do you rely on your trading income to sustain your livelihood, or do you have other risk-free income sources that you can rely on? Because I know it becomes quite challenging if you're entirely reliant on your trading to pay the bills every month. I mean, where do you stand on that one? Are you a trader that just eats what you kill, or have you got other risk-free income sources as well?
No, I got other income sources. The first year I was full time, it was straight trading. That was the only thing I was doing. And I'm glad I got into other resources. Not because it didn't work out, but because it mentally just makes trading that much easier.
Yeah.
So yeah, I do mentor people. I do teach people that provides an income for me. I have, other investments that provide passive income for me. It's not a lot, but it's enough to give me a little bit more of that kind of safeness over my head. But to be honest, the biggest thing with when I was trading, when I was relying solely on trading as an income, was that I had all the data to back it up, which gave me so much confidence. Because it can be really stressful, right? If you're only relying on trading, then it's like, okay, if I don't make money this week, how am I going to eat, right? And I was smart about it. The thing I tell other people and what I did is, make sure you have at least 6 months of savings built up in case shit hits the fan, you gotta get back to a job. So I was like, okay, I have a lot of income saved up. So anything crazy happens, I'm still gonna be okay for at least another 6 months. But I also knew like, hey, I've been doing this for about a year successfully, not making a lot, but enough to give me the confidence that I had consistency in it, right? And I knew that the strategy works. I knew that if I just follow this, I will make money, right, over time. So that gave me a lot of confidence going into it, but then also obviously now kind of venturing into other things like the trading journal and mentoring people, definitely helps out for sure.
Okay. All right. Super. I mean, you're a youngster, right? So you've obviously got no big commitments to family and kids and a big mortgage to pay and all that kind of thing, which in some ways, I suppose I'm envious of that because it makes it easier when you don't have all of those things that that ultimately give you a pretty high monthly burn rate to have to service. So it makes it easier, well, I'm going to say easier in inverted commas, to kind of get by as a trader with relatively lowish monthly expenditure. Do you think that this is something that you can continue to do, once you get later on in life? If and then maybe this is a bit presumptuous, but assuming you want to settle down at some stage and have a partner and have kids and a house and a dog and whatever, the things that people typically do when they get older. Do you see this as a sustainable career that you could still do once those sort of demands start coming your way?
1,000%. I mean, the biggest thing for me is I think long term, right? And the whole reason I got into trading in the first place was because I hated my Bed Bath & Beyond job and I wanted to not be able to have a job, right? And so I knew that if I was going to set up my trading in a way where I would have to spend 8 hours of the day at the screens every day, it's no different than working any other job, right? Except added stress. So I was like, okay, I need to set up my trading in a way where it doesn't do that, right? I can trade for 30 minutes an hour a day. That's where I found automations. That's where I found swing trading. I found a few other tools that allow me to do that. And like the way I have it set up now is like literally today I took a trade. I was done by 10:10, like 40 minutes in the market open. So it's very easy for me to be done and then fill out the journal and then I'm basically done by 10:30. So I would assume if I have all these other obligations, other things I'm working on, I could still keep trading going for as long as I want to.
Okay. All right. And when you get a situation like that where you've made your money early in the morning, you do not have the temptation to stick around and look for another trade, try and dial it up, make a good day into a really great day.
I used to like crazy. It was terrible. And that's, a problem every trader is going to have. Over the past like 2 years, 2.5 years, it really I that's I don't want to like toot my horn, but that's one of the things that I feel like I got really good at, is knowing when to walk away, which is really tough to do. And like I said, it took me like 5 years to really get to that point. But now it's at the point where I simply don't care, because like you said, I don't have a lot of expenses, right? I already have a lot of savings. I don't need the next dollar. So if I make $500 in a day, or if I lose $400, $700, doesn't matter. It's like, okay, I'm not gonna I like I want to go live my life. I'm not gonna stick around and look for another setup. I know there's gonna be another setup tomorrow. Maybe not, like, there's trades I don't days I don't take trades, but I know I'll just come back tomorrow. Market's always gonna be there. So I'm typically one, two trades done. Rarely ever take more than one to two trades, or past the first hour. If I don't see a setup by then, I just kind of log off.
Okay. All right. Interesting. So if you were to go back now and talk to your younger self, you're 23 now. You said you started trading when you were about 17, right? You've been doing this 6, 7 years now. If you could go back now at your age now, but go and have a conversation with your 17-year-old self, who's just starting out, starry-eyed, looking at this market and thinking, like you said, you saw someone online trade to made $2,000 in a minute, and you thought, well, I can do that. How hard can it be? What if you could go back and have a conversation with 17-year-old Jordan, what would you tell him? What lessons have you learned that you would want him to adhere to in the future?
Yeah, I would tell myself to be patient, and I wouldn't even listen to myself, because I was just so stubborn when I was 17. But the thing that's funny is, like, because when I was 16, 17, again, the whole reason I got into trading was because I hated my current situation. I feel like it's what a lot of people do too. Nothing wrong with that, right? I was in school, I hated school, and I knew I would have to get a job and go to college after. So I said, okay, if I can get trading to work before I graduate, then I can just do this full time out of high school. So my original goal was like 6 months, because I didn't even want to go to senior year. I was like, okay, 6 months, end of the year, I'll be able to get this done. I can turn $1,000 into 100 grand or $1 million. I pulled out the compound calculator. I'm like doing the math on it. I'm like, yeah, like it's easy. Like I just gotta take two trades a day, like do this. And I blow up my account in like 3 days, right? That's always how it goes. So that's the thing, is being patient, because I wanted to get rich and full time out of high school. Then I got to college. Then I told myself, I want to be full time out of college, which was 4 years. That's a good enough time frame to look at. But after the first like 6, 3 months of classes, I was like, I don't even know if I can do this for another 4 years. So then I started thinking, okay, let me just work on this, get rich really quick in the first like another 4 months, and I can drop out, don't have to do college. And so this constant thing of like, let me just try and get this done quickly, because I hated my current situation so much, actually kind of delayed the process a lot more, right? It took me about like 3 years to actually become profitable, and another like year and a half to go full time after that. So like 4.5, 5 years. And so if I was patient from the beginning and I said, yeah, maybe my situation isn't great right now, but if I can just stick it out and like be okay with this situation for the next 3 years, and trade like a normal person would, instead of trying to get rich quick, I probably would have got profitable a lot faster, right? So the thing I tend to look at, I would tell myself is, trade as if, or go into trading with the mindset that you're going to, like, you're not going to make this work for 5 years, right? You just won't see any profits. You're not going to see any fruits of your labor for 5 years. And if you can go into the mindset trading with that, you'll be profitable in like 3 months, 6 months.
Okay.
That's probably what I would tell myself for sure.
Okay. All right. Okay. Very interesting. And last thing, I mean, are you into reading at all? Do you read any trading books? There's a lot of very famous trading books out there, but I know you younger generation sometimes do things differently. But are you into books, reading?
I hate reading. No way. I didn't read any trading books at all. I know some of them. I know like the Mark Douglas or Mark or whatever it is, like Trading the Zone. Like I know some of them. Personally, I'm a more visual guy. I like to look at. I would go on YouTube. I like looking at Twitter, whatever it is. Seeing and hearing and listening and all that kind of stuff made it a lot easier to learn. I'm just not a reader, so I never really read any books. I'm sure they help out other people who like to do that, but it was never for me.
So you're more visual, and I mean, there is a lot of good, there are a lot of good resources out on YouTube and on, as you say, on Twitter. I guess there's a lot of There's so much available now, right? TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, all of these things. There's a lot of information out there. But I guess it also comes down to being selective about what you follow. And I mean, I look at Twitter a lot and I find a lot of it very interesting, but there's also a lot of garbage out there as well. So I suppose you've got to be able to sift from the sifted and figure out what's good and what's not. Is there anyone in particular that you follow on videos, like or on YouTube, for example, who you think is really worthwhile following for trading guidance?
No one in specific. So to be honest, like here's the way I kind of look at trading and education is like at the end of the day, as I said, the only way to be profitable long term is to have an edge, right? You need a strict set of rules that tell you when to get in, when to get out. If you have that with good risk management and psychology is kind of like the three pillars, you will be successful. Like there, if you have those three, there's no reason you wouldn't be successful. And so like the best thing that you can probably do is kind of learn the basics of everything and not like a set strategy in the beginning, right? Because when you're learning, right, you got to learn how price action works, certain indicators work, all that kind of stuff. And so like a lot of times you have all these guys who are on YouTube and Twitter and whatever, and they're essentially showing you their strategy, right? And they're showing you like maybe it's an EMA crossover. It's like an opening range breakout, right? Classic like trend line break, whatever it is. And I'm not going to sit here and say trend line breaks don't work or opening range breakouts don't work, but you need to ask yourself, if you are watching a video on an opening range breakout, you have to say, is the strategy back tested? Do I know for sure this works? Does this give me an edge in the market over the long run? And the answer is no. You're kind of just learning fluff. You're kind of just trying to gamble. Now, that's not to say, again, learning the basics, because when you get to finding an edge or creating an edge or however you come around that, you do need some knowledge, right? You have to know kind of how price action works, how things move. And that kind of helped me develop my own edge. So learning the basics is key, but I wouldn't dive in too much when, you know, someone is telling you like they have a golden strategy or it's perfect or whatever. And really look at, is this back tested, right? Is it forward tested? Does it have real data showing it works? And is it a very strict set of rules too? Because again, like you can learn an opening range breakout, right? Let's say it's 5 minute candle, opening range breakout on Apple every day. It's like, okay, you wait for the 5 minute opening range. Where do you put your stop loss? Where do you put your target, right? Do you wait for a 5 minute close? Do you not wait for a 5 minute close? Are there certain days you shouldn't do it? What if it's on earnings? It's not on earnings. Do you have the data to see the win rates, the risk rewards? How do you know this actually works? And then we just start doing open range breakouts on 20 different stocks because you learn it and you're using different rules. One time you wait for the 5 minute close, the other time you don't. You put your stop loss here. The next time you put it here, you have no data. You have no idea what you're doing. You're gambling. At the end of the day, you're going to lose money doing that. And so I think there's a lot of noise out there, but there is also a lot of stuff that works. So, you know, finding what works for you is great, but really understanding the idea of what an edge is and making sure you have one is like the most important thing that I look at.
Okay, fantastic. Well, Jordan, it's been really awesome speaking to you. Jordan Fogel, where can the listeners to this podcast find your work or follow you?
Yeah, Twitter is FT_trading. There's Jordan F trading. YouTube, same thing, Jordan F trading. I'm not really on Instagram that much, so Twitter and
Okay.
YouTube are the biggest.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Twitter's where I found you, and I've seen a lot of your content. It's very good. So that was what prompted me to want to interview you. So thank you very much for your time, Jordan. It's been a pleasure speaking to you, and all the best. And hopefully we can catch up again at a later stage.
Yeah, I appreciate it. This was awesome. Love
Yeah.
it.
Thank you for your time, man, and you keep well.
Yep.
Thanks for joining us for this week's episode of Talking with Traders, sponsored by IG, a world-leading CFD provider. We really are privileged to have such a strong global provider of online trading services as our backer for this podcast series. Remember to subscribe for more episodes by clicking on the subscribe button of your favorite podcast app. Or if you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe to our YouTube channel, give us a thumbs up, and leave a comment. We welcome the engagement. Till next time.